members of the Gardaí who were killed or wounded, members of paramilitary organisations who were killed and wounded as well, street disturbances, and you know, there's a number of major hunger strikes in Portlaoise in the 70s, which almost lead, in both 1975 and 1977, people come close to dying on hunger strike in prison, which would have been the first time that had happened in the Republic since the 1940s. And it comes pretty close. I mean, these are pretty bitter occasions. Very, very hostile relations between prison staff and Republican prisoners. A lot of violence at the protests over the prisoners. A lot more support in some ways than you'd imagine for the prisoners at various stages. I mean, in 1974, there's a big breakout from Portlaoise of IRA prisoners, and 19 men escape, and a song celebrating the escape called 19 Men gets to number one. You have this kind of complex mixture of sympathy, which isn't reflected in many ways in mainstream politics. At the same time, a level of fear as well of this conflict spreading and of the people who are presumed to be intent on spreading it. I suppose one of the things which I've found, which has forced me to reassess my own thinking in some ways, is that there's a very pervasive view that until Gerry Adams and others take the leadership of the Republican movement in the North, only then does Sinn Féin become a cohesive political force. And that really up till then, Sinn Féin in the South were just people who collected money and sold newspapers. Looking at it again, I think you had a much more vibrant Republican organisation in Southern Ireland than most people imagined. You have lots of people from across the state involved. You have councillors elected. You have attempts to build up political profile. And you have a lot of very interesting ideological debates in the South as well, which I won't go into. But you do have a Sinn Féin organisation here. Now, there is a tension between them and the Northerners, and that becomes really apparent in the early 80s. You do have the dominance post-hunger strike completely of the Northern leadership. But the Northerners do recognise that there is potential in the South, and there is also a new generation attracted to the Republican movement by the prison protests. Danny Morrison writes in the early 80s about how, you know, the ghetto population of the South is where we're going to grow. And in some ways, again, retrospectively, you can look at it and you can see, well, maybe he didn't really understand, in some ways, Southern society. But they do think that it's certainly among the poorest areas of the South that they're going to emerge as a force. They look at the success, the relative success of the Workers' Party, and they think that can be emulated as well. They do begin to eventually move towards more taking elections more seriously, certainly, and trying to build up themselves in particular communities as well. And there's lots of failures and some successes along the way to do that. But Sinn Féin in the 1980s, even though many of those people would still be involved in Sinn Féin today, it still is quite different culturally an organisation than Sinn Féin now, I think, in some ways. Much more rhetorically revolutionary, for example, very hostile to the Southern establishment, still calls it the Free State, unapologetic about the IRA's armed struggle, obviously. Not just unapologetic, but actually, you know, completely in support of that. And would often be engaged in a lot of confrontation with the forces of the Southern state, which, of course, the Southern state was also engaged in confrontation with them, because being active in Republican politics meant, at the very least, being questioned by the special branch. There is a shift in terms of Republican strategy, but I suppose I'd like to look again at maybe at what Republicans were doing in the early 70s to try and reintegrate that into the story. Some of the Northern Republican leadership begin to recognise that emotional solidarity isn't enough. In the 70s, you see a lot of Republicans from the North, when they appeal for support in the South, tends to be on the basis that your people are being attacked, why don't you do something about it? Now, Maura Drum makes a speech in Limerick in 1971 to what she considers a small crowd, and she says, "I don't think the people of Munster want us to be free at all." And it's very much, you know, why aren't you doing more? And actually, at the end of the day, that doesn't put butter on the spuds, to be honest with you. Most people aren't driven by purely moral appeals. And you have in the mid-1980s, Gerry Adams, for example, arguing that we can't expect support in Ballymun because of the Brits kicking in doors in Ballymurphy, which is an important recognition of the fact that conditions of Northern Nationalists are a long way removed in many ways from the experience of a lot of people in the South. And while there'll always be a few people who are motivated enough to become involved because of that, most won't actually. Most will want some answers to the problems on their own doorstep.
The recent presidential bid of Martin McGuinness.
You do have a very strong and vocal block of people who are determined that Sinn Féin don't gain any kind of mainstream acceptability. And there are legitimate political, you know, reasons why someone might object to Sinn Féin. But a lot of the coverage was so hysterical and also so ill-informed that it really, in some ways, I think it's completely counterproductive, even from their own point of view.
For example?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the stuff in the Sunday Independent, it's not researched. It has no bearing on actual, you know, history at all. It's a reiteration of slogans about why the Provost were wrong. And it doesn't bear, to me, any kind of results of research or even, you know, kind of attempts to understand the kind of politics of the North or the South. And I think it's just, you know, it might make the people who write it feel better, but I absolutely think it's worthless in terms of even political debate. There is there's plenty of room for a critique of Sinn Féin from all sorts of political angles. But most of the coverage of McGuinness wasn't really a critique of Sinn Féin or their policies at all. It was simply a kind of knee-jerk hostility, not just to Sinn Féin, but to the idea of Northern Republicanism altogether. And that's one aspect of the presidential election, which was interesting. Now, I don't think at the end of the day it cost Sinn Féin too many votes. I think what's also interesting from the point of view of people who live in Northern Ireland, both nationalist and unionist, is the way that Southern society prioritises sacrifice in some ways. I mean, without casting any aspersions at all on the man whose father was a soldier in the Defence Forces who was killed in 1983, one Irish soldier was killed by the IRA in 30 years. And this was regarded as a reason why Martin McGuinness could not become president, a position with very little actual power. Whereas Martin McGuinness is Deputy First Minister in Northern Ireland, where the Provisional IRA killed over 1,700 people. I mean, whatever person's political views in Northern Ireland, it does seem absolutely ridiculous that people are adamant that one soldier and seven Gardaí killed by the Provisional IRA are somehow, what it seems to Northerners, and many of them have said it, is that it seems that there is a pyramid of, you know, sacrifice, and that the South is anything that happens in the South is regarded as far, far worse than anything. In the North, all prisoners have to be released as part of this deal. All parties have to share power as part of this agreement. But please don't tell us in the Republic that we have to accept one of them coming down here. And again, the language, of course, is instructive. So I think that's a cultural aspect of the campaign, which was pretty apparent. In terms of Republican politics itself, I think what was interesting and what seemed to be completely missed, except probably by what are considered the dissident Republicans. In some ways, the rhetoric used by Martin McGuinness and Sinn Féin marked the end of anti-treaty republicanism. Martin McGuinness said that he would accept that the title of Oglacmaherin belonged to the Irish Defence Forces. Whether or not he means it, the fact is that that is a huge step in terms of Irish Republican history. You know, Oglacmaherin were the IRA. The IRA was the army of the Irish people. The Defence Forces are the heirs to the Free State Army, the army that overthrew the Republic. Now, that might seem arcane in many ways to most people, but for Republicans that was very important. And for McGuinness to say that, really, you know, in terms of presidential election, he's quite prepared to accept the Irish army are now Oglacmaherin. That really marked, in some ways, the death of the anti-treaty tradition, which his movement does come from. Similarly, Sinn Féin put out a statement during the election in response to critics of McGuinness and his right to stand, where they argued, and the language used was, Martin's journey is similar to that undertaken by many in our past. And they singled out De Valera, Frank Aiken, Liam Cosgrave, Michael Collins, Sean McBride. And again, that's very interesting because there are many similarities. But an Irish Republican would never have accepted that Martin McGuinness's journey had anything in common with that of Liam Cosgrave or Michael Collins or Frank Aiken or Eamon de Valera for years ago, they would have said, no, this is something completely different. So to even suggest that there is a similarity is in fact in many ways burying anti-treaty republicanism. And I think that that aspect of his campaign was completely forgotten. I suppose the hysterics in the Sunday Independent wouldn't get the point anyway, and many Republicans mightn't want to get the point, but I thought that was a significant aspect of the presidential election.
Isn't there a substantial amount of people in the South who don't view it by the achievement or otherwise of the Republican ideal, but who view their national identity as nothing to do with the way Republicans look at it?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose another way of looking at that question is that really there is at least one generation, if not two now, for whom the Northern Ireland conflict is absolutely history, and they have no emotional or visceral response to it at all. I mean, I was talking to a student yesterday who was doing some work on republicanism, who said to me, you know, I don't really understand this argument about the impact of the Northern Ireland troubles, because I just barely remember when John Bruton was Taoiseach, you know. As far as most people in the South are concerned, Northern Ireland was fixed. There is a power-sharing government which they don't know much about the details of. They don't really know anything about the financial or other constraints on it, but it looks a lot better than it did 10, 15, certainly 20 years ago, and therefore it's over. And in terms of their worldview then, they'll continue to think of themselves as Irish and maybe even as Irish nationalists or Republicans, but within very much the constraints of the 26 county state.